Gordon Buchanan.
Must be at least 20 years ago when I first saw the Gobi Desert.
Sand dunes stretching all the way to a distant horizon.
I was flying to China and the pilot announced, if you look out of your window, you were flying over the Gobi Desert. It's almost like a sort of chill that runs through you when you just see such wildness.
Snow-covered mountains and bare crags.
Just desert, mountains, sand dunes. Endless emptiness. But it's not empty. This is a landscape where people have prospered for thousands of years. And their success is off the backs of one of the most unusual, one of the most recognizable creatures on Earth. Camels. It is one of the most intriguing animals in the world, and it is an animal that I know nothing about.
I've come here to find out why it is that camels have lived so successfully in this harsh environment and helped humans to do the same.
The mission really is to understand this extraordinary animal.
My epic camel adventure with Gordon Buchanan.
My plan is to experience this desert in the way that it's been done for centuries. It'll be a journey of nearly 2 weeks, crossing a seemingly inhospitable place. And I'll be doing it side by side with this most iconic, yet least understood animal.
It's going to be really important to, I suppose, form a bond with these camels. How do you form a bond with an animal that I've never spent time with before?
I'm going to try and do it by embarking on an epic journey across the Gobi with them. And my starting point is here, in the west of Mongolia. Up ahead are two gir. They're completely portable dwellings and home to a nomadic family who have very graciously agreed to lend me one of their camels.
Sambano.
Nice and cosy.
This is Baira, his wife Jaggi, and their family. They are currently in their springtime home on the plains where the weather is much warmer and there's grazing for their cattle. They'll soon migrate up into the mountains to escape the blistering summer heat.
What might nomads think when they see a foreigner travelling through this part of Mongolia?
Baira says people will be slightly surprised, but the reception will be respectful, no different from the way nomads receive each other. We will first offer tea, put out food on the table, then offer a meal. Gordon accepts a drinking bowl and sips from it.
That's good.
They've also agreed to prepare me as best they can for the journey ahead. Jaggi has very kindly made me a dell. It's a traditional nomadic robe designed to protect me from the cold and wind of the Gobi in spring.
I feel like a king.
Jaggi says, may the dress be fleeting, but the wearer enjoy a long life.
I have some gifts.
Kneeling in front of Baira, Gordon gives him a penknife.
This is the antlers from the deer that we have in Scotland.
I will use it to castrate baby animals and for cutting leather for bridles and halters.
Perfect.
Holding a set of coloured pencils, a toddler with rosy cheeks sings for Gordon and gets a round of applause. Smoke drifting from the gear's chimney.
Baira and Jaggi are keen to introduce me to my travelling companion for the next 2 weeks.
I have a level of fear when it comes to these animals. Not because they're sort of unknown, but just because I don't think they look particularly approachable.
I mean, the closer you get, the more strange they become.
If you were to conjure up an image of a camel, you'd most likely think of the one-humped dromedary camel. About 90% of the world's camels are dromedaries. But Mongolian camels are Bactrian, and they have two humps.
It looks like someone made up
an animal with all sorts of leftover bits of other animals. Nose and mouth of a rabbit, ears of a grizzly bear. These big sort of calloused knees, it looked like they're from the Gruffalo. And their feet are sort of like a dinosaur. They've got kind of really beautiful eyes, so maybe the eyes of a fairy princess. Humps look like two yeti heads sort of bolted onto the back. You realise that this is just one funky-looking creature.
Right, I'm delaying the inevitable. This may be time for the test drive.
Domesticated Bactrian camels live to around 35 years old and can reach a shoulder height of 2.3 metres. He needs to sit for me to get on, and now I can see how those Gruffalo calloused knees help protect him from the scorching sand. Before he hands over the reins, Byra wants to lead me out so I can get a feel for the camel.
A weird animal and a weird noise. My word.
Okay.
At first impressions, it's not an uncomfortable animal to be on. It's nice. I think it was a movement that I was worried about. I just thought there kind of might be a sort of forward, backward, side to side motion. There is all of that, but it's quite manageable. There's something that's got a hypnotic sway, and that's what you've got. It's a bit hard about the backside, though. I feel like I've got a lot of security. Look at your rear hump that I can rest against. I've got your front hump, if that's what it's called, that I can cling on to. Hump comes to like a really sharp point. Far, at the top, most of it is actually like a kind of little pinnacle. Feels quite strange.
That was the easy part. Now, I need to do it on my own.
To make him stand up, what's the instruction?
Good, hook, guys.
Okay.
Hook.
There we go. Easily does. Come on. Right, easy.
The nomads wave off Gordon as he rides the camel across the grassy plain.
Hook.
Domesticated camels have these nose pegs that are put in at the very start of their training. It's a bit like getting an ear piercing. You just jiggle the rope to the left if you want to go left, and you jiggle it to the right if you want to go right.
What do you think about me being up here for a few weeks? Sound okay to you? There we go. And is it suck? You pull them down like that. Suck.
Right.
My training and tuition has involved learning to make the camels stand up, learning how to stay on, getting them to sit down.
How was that?
That's how, you know.
So I suppose all the rest of it, I'm just going to have to figure out on my own or from the camels.
The nomads camp under a perfectly blue sky.
How difficult would life be here if people with families didn't have camels?
Byra says, the camel is our most irreplaceable animal. During migration, we transport our gear on camels. We cover them with padding before loading. It's an admirable animal, strong and tough.
I just want to say thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye. Byra and Jaggi playing with their young child.
I have the camel that I'm riding, but Byra and Jaggi have also lent me a second pack camel for my food, tent, camera equipment. At this point, I'm wondering how I'll even manage one camel, let alone two.
Fairly.
Oh, what's that?
Doing good? Okay, and then tighten it off. I reckon I could do that. Bit of practice. Under. It is really taking me out of my comfort zone. You know, in an unfamiliar place with an unfamiliar animal, and it is an animal that I will 100% depend on. I'm not sure if there's been a bigger novice than me. Okay, just go easy on me, okay? Oh yeah, steady now. Hook.
Okay. Ready to go.
Einsam das Herr.
Hook.
Hook. Hook.
Hook. Hook.
I won't see Bayra and Jaggi again until I return their camels. At the end of a journey.
The nomad family wave goodbye to Gordon.
Between now and then, what happens, how it goes, it's anyone's guess. I mean, this is stunning. Look around. It's one of the most breathtaking landscapes I think I've ever seen. Very happy.
A vast sea of undulating sand dunes.
It is pretty dramatic. I feel like I'm in a movie. I'll be heading for the mighty Boombat Mountains. On the way, I'll be crossing sand dunes, vast plains, and stopping at known water spots. It's a route that Jaggi and Bayra know well. It's designed to challenge me so that I can get to understand the camels better. I'm hoping that I might even see some of the other extraordinary animals that live here, like saiga antelope, wolves, wild camels, and the most endangered bear on the planet, the Gobi bear, which might be found on the other side of the mountain.
Off we go. Hook, hook, hook.
Every animal has its own language.
Hook, hook, hook. Come on. Why are you stopping?
These camels will be trying to tell me something, and it's my job to try and understand what they're trying to say.
Come on. Burmph. They just sound grumpy the whole time.
I've never spent time in a sand dune system, ever, like this.
Hook, hook! Woo! We have movement, forward movement, that's good.
Not going as the crow flies, I'm going as the camel walks, which I think is going to be a little bit of a meandering route. Bactrian camels have an excellent ability to navigate, so even if they're taken off course by the dunes, they always find their way back to the route. Maybe this is what they're trying to tell me.
Walk on. Come on.
I'm not hearing it. And it's not going well.
Oh, come on, pal, don't stop.
This is a lot harder than I anticipated. Successful working relationship with these camels, it's not guaranteed. If they don't trust me, they're not going to have their camel version of respect for me. There's a lot of room for failure. Now my sore arse is really beginning to bother me. You need a dentist. Starting to insult the camel. It's only day one. Sorry about that. Just some hot. Bothered. I think we're all getting tired. What about if I tickle your ear? I think you like it, you just don't want to admit it. Good boy. Right, walk on. It's progress.
They move onwards through the dunes.
There is this perception that all deserts are blisteringly hot, but springtime here in Mongolia, the temperatures, they vary wildly from day to night.
Last month, it was minus 50 in this area. In the summer, could go up to plus 45 degrees Celsius. These camels are an animal that lives here year-round. They can cope with that. And they don't struggle.
The incredible thing about camel fart is that it actually helps cool them down. Their fart acts as an insulator, not just from the cold, but also from the heat.
Just sitting up here, watching how he's always looking, always listening, you realise that they are incredibly sensitive animals and intelligent. They reckon that camels are almost as intelligent as African elephants. They are a very bright, emotional, sentient creature.
I see it, boys. An oasis.
Gobi means waterless place in Mongolian, but there are patches of water here. It's sparsely dotted with lakes, oases, wells, which are critically important water sources for its people, wildlife and plants.
Do you want some water? Here we go.
The camel bends its neck and drinks.
How is it? Nice and cool. You can hear the water being slurped up through the mouth. It sounds like someone's unblocking the drain pipe. Having to work all its way from the mouth down this S bend, down the throat into the stomach.
Camels don't lap water like a dog or a cat. They dip their lips below the water and suck. That means they can drink a large quantity of water very quickly.
What they could drink in one sitting would actually weigh heavier than me. That makes me feel less guilty about sitting on your back.
This vast desert was once under the sea. The legacy of that is that some of the water is still slightly salinated. Camels here are the only land mammal that can drink it. Their kidneys extract the salt from the water, and the concentrated salt is passed out through their urine.
At the lakeside, Gordon is crouching between his two camels.
How does it smell? All I can say is it's going to get a lot worse before this journey's over. Right, we're done. Find nowhere to camp. Come on.
You can have more tomorrow if you haven't had your full 150-litre quota.
Clouds drifting across the sky as the sun sets. In golden light, as the sun dips below the horizon, Gordon sets up camp with the two camels lying on the bare earth. He binds one camel's front legs together.
Just putting these hobbles on so that they can graze and move around this area but not walk for miles and miles.
Cool couple of travelling companions, that's for sure. Oh, look at the moon coming up.
You see the moon?
Nice work today. Sorry I got a bit frustrated.
By lamplight, Gordon lights a small fire.
So tomorrow's 23 kilometres. Looks pretty tough. We're talking about vertical rock. And you see that dark line on the map. Nystag Erig, it's called. And I'm just hoping that I'm going to find a way through that.
With a bottle of whiskey at hand, Gordon rolls up his map as the full moon rises over a distant ridge. Now, under a blue sky, the camels are plodding over the dunes.
How are we, camels? Do we sleep well? I'm riding a camel across this landscape that kind of time has forgot. The Gobi Desert is this unimaginably vast landscape. East to west, it's 1,000 miles. North to south, 600 miles. You could fit the United Kingdom easily five times over into this one place. So I'm getting my first views of Nystag Erig, and it is, oh my gosh, it is a massive rock wall. The closer I get to this, the bigger it gets. It just doesn't look doable. At the bottom of Nystag Erig, there are, I suppose, three choices. One, I ride the camel up. Two, I get off and walk the camel up. Three, I just don't do it at all, and I go for hours and hours and find my way around. I'm actually quite reluctant to get off or learn more about the camels and their capabilities the longer I'm in the saddle.
So I'm thinking, okay, what would an experienced nomad do? And I think they would ride to the top. Okay, guys, let's give it a go. Hook, hook, up we go. Hey, it's just a little easy peasy walk.
Gordon's riding his camel up the spine of a rocky slope.
Okay. Make sure you've got a good old grip. Camels lack a thing called a stifle fold. It's an area of skin that a lot of animals have. It goes from sort of partly down their back thigh up to their belly. It's kind of most pronounced if you see it on horses. And without a stifle fold, a camel's not just restricted to its legs moving back and forward. So it gives them a lot of manoeuvrability and a lot of dexterity when they're moving over rough terrain. They're doing a grand job here. Come on. Also help climbing. They can put a lot of distance between their front legs and their back legs and stretch them out. Okay, it's getting very narrow here. Okay. Oh, ho, 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 ho. Oh my word. Just falling off to the right and the left. Incredibly steep. Okay, no slipping, no sliding. Come on, hook, hook! Come on. Hook, hook! It's just getting steeper. Oh my God, not to the left, not to the left, not to the left. Whoa! Good boy.
Woo! They're reaching a ridge at the top of the Woo-hoo. Steep incline.
Yeehaw! Hidey-ho. Well done. Good lads. That is incredible. I am very relieved. Exceptional. Ruff. You agree? This escarpment is a significant hurdle, but it's nothing really compared to the mountains that lie ahead.
Distant snowy peaks.
Nomads don't name their animals, but I would like to give both these camels names. You hear that squeaking noise? It's actually him grinding his teeth.
Hey, you.
What about you, Mr. Squeaks? Huh? Oh, you let me tickle your ear. We're getting somewhere. Your big dewy eyes, he just looks lovely. I was going to call this guy Grumpy Pants. God, it's a bit unfair. I think Chewy's good. You're always chewing the cud, and you sound a bit like someone of the same name. What do you think? I'm really starting to appreciate just how special camels are. His feet are incredible. They are huge. But I suppose if you weigh just shy of a ton, you're going to need four big feet to stop you sinking into the sand. I remember when I was a kid, somebody told me that camels' humps contained water and that's how they could live in a desert. Even better than water, they contain fat because fat contains water and they can go for long periods without water, without food, when they've got fat stored on their backs. Each of those humps could contain 35 kilos of fat. When you look into their beautiful big eyes, you know, they're a miraculous design. Two sets of eyebrows, three sets of eyelids. They can close their eyes down if there's driving snow or dust or sand and still get around. And inside that bunny rabbit nose are narrow winding passages lined with mucus that absorb moisture while the camel exhales, meaning that as little water as possible is lost. The more time I spend with camels, the more they make sense. I got sore bum cheeks in the morning. Yes, I. Sore bum cheeks in the afternoon. I got two bum cheeks behind me. Oh, camels, I got to give them a rest. Yeah. I think maybe just another 20 metres and I'm going to get a view over to Bumbag Mountain. That's where I'm heading.
Hook, hook!
They're approaching the crest of another ridge.
Oh my word, look at that! That's sensational. What a view!
Huge Durgan Lake. Right in front of me. And over to my left, Bumbag Mountain. That's beautiful, stunning. I think that is really going to test my camel riding skills to the max. You up for it? Yeah, take that as a yes.
That's a challenge for another day. Right now, the sun is dropping. I'm starving, and I've still to make camp.
Feels good.
After pitching his tent, Gordon hammers pegs into the earth for tethering the camels.
So I'm gathering dung, and that's what I'm going to use to build my fire. So little waste with camels.
The best grazing for them, the grazing they like the most, is a bristly grass and really thorny bushes.
Their lips and tongues are incredibly tough, and their mouths are lined with these firm, fleshy protrusions, which stop the thorns jabbing and poking them while they eat.
The food that goes into their mouths, they process and reprocess, chew the cud and get as much of the nutrients out of the food that they eat as they can. And even when it comes out at the back end, it's almost completely dry, so it dries super quick.
Dung burning on the fire.
Gosh, the smell, the actual smoke is really quite sweet and fragrant. The closer you are to nature, I think the better you can understand yourself. Because we surround ourselves by stuff that we don't need. We're out of touch. We're out of touch with nature. We're out of touch with ourselves. Certainly I get overwhelmed by my modern way of life. And what you realise that this simple way of life gives people is sort of a high level of contentment. There's a lot to envy about, you know, the contentment that people here seem to have.
By lamplight, sitting beside his fire, Gordon is eating.
I'm very happy at the moment.
The camels looking up at the sky. Then Gordon's tent with a light glowing inside, which is then switched off. Overhead, the shifting sky is dotted with countless stars. Gordon emerges from his tent.
It is a beautiful morning. There's a water source just over the sand dunes where the camels can have a drink while I strike the tent.
A small black bird in a tree's bare branches.
Off you go. Go far.
Gordon washes his face and cleans his teeth, then starts to pack up the camp.
The only problem is, I forgot to hobble the camels.
Gordon's running over the sand, looking for any sign of the camels.
Where the hell? These camels could have gone anywhere. Not that they'd be running at 40 miles an hour, but they can.
Dot on the horizon. There they are.
Okay, boys. Do not go anywhere. If I can't catch them, this is over. But that would just put an end to this whole trip. Could I go wide from them in the hope that they don't know that I'm trying to catch them? Just see if I can pick up the pace.
He spies the camels through his binoculars.
Okay, this might be... Hey, my boy, do you want me to sort your rope? Hey, good boy, I can sort that. Bingo! Hey, my boy. Have you ever ridden a camel bareback? Neither have I.
He climbs onto the camel.
Hoi, hoi, hoi! Oh, that saddle wasn't sore enough. This is pretty excruciating. No.
Oh, no, no, no. My God, that is so... Oh.
As soon as Judy starts trotting, Squeaks is off.
Please, please, please. If there is a god of lost camels, I need him. So I'm going to see if I can slip off.
He approaches Squeaks on foot.
Okay, this is really bumpy ground up here. Oh, you don't want to go there. It's very bumpy, this stuff. It's very bumpy. Got you. Oh, my word.
Oh, Lord. Oh, jeez, I feel like crying. Oh, my God. I thought that was never gonna happen. Okay, back to camp.
After collapsing to his knees in relief, Gordon leads the camels back across the sand.
In this environment, if you lose your camel or lose your horse, you're stuffed. No way you'd last more than 4 days tops.
Thank goodness I could follow my footsteps back, or this could have got a whole lot worse.
I just cannot afford to make any mistakes. Lesson learned. Big lesson.
A beetle scuttles across the sand.
I'm amazed by how varied this landscape is. I've spent days working my way through a sand dune system, and now I've got many more days stretching in front of me across this vast, rocky plain.
I see a dot way off in the distance. I think it's not just a camel, but someone riding a camel.
Right. Got to polish up on my Mongolian before any encounter. Hello is an easy one. It says, Sen Meno. It's easy. Hello. Mal Surig Targin Tav Dayu. That means, I hope that your animals are fattening up. Well?
This is about the halfway point of my journey, and it's great to bump into a fellow nomad. Who better to give me some tips?
What do you think of my two camels? Do you think they look healthy?
The one you're riding looks slightly weak, but the other one looks strong. The one I'm riding is really fat.
Definitely. I'll swap that one for this one. The heat coming from your camel is amazing. It's like sitting against a radiator. So if it was in the winter time and you were lost and you're in a blizzard and it was minus 40, could you just cuddle up to the camel and survive?
They're a very good shelter. When you're herding your sheep in the winter, leaning against the camel feels very warm. You cannot get cold.
I'll have to remember that when we take to the mountains. And what do you think, sort of, for me to cross the mountains, how difficult do you think it's going to be with these two camels?
It might be slippery for your camels, but you should be able to cross.
Do you think it's best to lead the camels and walk up than ride them?
It's better to walk leading the camels.
It's not an easy existence for nomads. It's not a place where you could really survive on your own.
What are the moments in life that give you that sense of happiness?
I feel happy when I am close to my home and when I am at home with my family in a lively atmosphere.
That's the same for me, but I think second to that, I'm at my happiest when I'm somewhere like this. Time to go.
The Mongolian nomad sings.
When I arrived here, I would have thought, you're caged by your circumstances. That couldn't be further from the truth. Here, What I realise is that people have an unimaginable liberty. They don't just feel free. Freedom is part of this nomadic way of life.
Gordon and the camels are crossing a vast area of flat, stony ground.
Oh, this is sight for sore eyes. Sight of Durgan Lake. It is vast. 120 square miles. It's like an ocean. Actually, by comparison, it's a bit of a puddle compared to how big this expanse of water used to be. It was part of an inland sea.
They're heading towards the water's edge.
The Gobi Desert is the most rapidly expanding desert on the planet. There are places that were lush and green and places that had water that are disappearing and just being replaced by dust and sand. In recent decades, the temperature has risen here by 2 degrees. And 2 degrees doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a difference between life and death for some animals. That means a difference between sort of a nomadic way of life halted in its track.
Right, let's go and check it out. Chewie is a little bit reluctant to go forward. What's up, boy? Are you overwhelmed by the amount of water? Come on, pal. Something about this that Chewie is not happy with. I'm going to have to get off and lead. Maybe it's the gravel. They can feel vibrations through their feet, so if there's any predators approaching, they can feel it through their feet. So maybe something as unusual as gravel, pebbles. Maybe that's too much for them. Oh. He's going to have a sniff of the pebbles. Yeah, I think it is that. Are you bamboozled? Excavate your toes. Come on. There you go, one step. It doesn't move in the same way as sand. Come on, you big softy. Are you worried? Are you afraid? Good boy. Hook, hook. Right, there you go.
The camels walk tentatively on the shingle.
Even in spring, the lake is still covered in ice.
We can stop and you can have a drink. I'll fill up with water as well.
Water is the most precious thing in the Gobi Desert. It's the hardest thing to find. So when you do find it, it's not just important for a quick bath.
Gordon is bathing in the partly frozen lake. He breaks up the ice with a hatchet and puts some in a sack.
Frozen water, ice like this, is a great way to transport this precious resource for me and for my camels.
A camel drinking from the lake, then Gordon blowing on his hands to warm them up.
Come on, guys. This walk will help me warm up after my duke in the Durgan. Refreshing. Given I haven't really washed for over a week, let's say.
The camels' large feet spread out as they walk across the flat, stony ground, led by Gordon. A herd of antelopes with pale hides.
Saiga antelope. It's a little antelope, this species, only found in Mongolia.
The most distinguishing feature is that big bulbous nose. Like the camels, the saiga is perfectly designed to live in the extremes of this habitat. So in the summer months, that big nose can filter dust, can actually help cool the blood. And in the winter time, it can warm the air before it enters into their lungs. You've got to be the coolest looking antelope on the planet. If I was here maybe even 50 years ago, I could be looking at herds of hundreds and thousands. So as amazing it is to see them, it's sad to know that this is now a threatened species. Number of factors, you know, isolated population, small gene pool, climate change, poaching, disease from livestock. You know, of all of the things that these animals have survived, the biggest challenge might be the next 40, 50 years. I've never seen a saiga before, and I've wanted to, and now I have. So that means something to me.
He's lying on the ground recording the saiga with a camera with a telephoto lens.
Don't go anywhere. That's so much better. This is an unusual landscape. The animals that live here, they're kind of unusual. The thought that there is a species of bear living in somewhere like this, that is something that really does blow my mind. You know, that is, I suppose, the ultimate would be to see a Gobi bear.
But before I can even start to look, the camels and I have to face the toughest leg of our journey yet. This is where we leave the plains and head up into the mountains, the last leg before we drop into bear country.
Now these mountains are beginning to look big.
I'm concerned about it. Doing it on camelback, that's what I'm most worried about.
This is kind of pro level, really. Taking camels over very rugged terrain, steep inclines. So, yeah. You know, I started off as being the novice here, but I think for this leg, we're all rookies.
Clouds drifting over the mountains.
Okay, we're in the mountains.
If all goes well, it'll take 3 days to climb up to a pass where we'll be able to cross the mountain.
Rocky as anything. There's big boulders that I'm going to trip over, or loose stuff I'm going to slide on. But the camels, man, they make it look easy. These huge feet of theirs can find even the smallest area to put the foot down.
Gordon puts on a woolly hat.
Right, my boy. Okay. Oh, man, the air is thin up here.
They're climbing up a steep slope.
So we're 2,500 metres. It's about twice the height of the highest mountain in the UK.
A bird is soaring overhead as they come down the other side of the barren slope. A bird's eye view of a herd of long-haired cattle.
It's a little herd of yaks. These are domesticated yaks. They pretty much live up in the mountains all year round. Nomads will come up here to milk them. They can cope with blisteringly cold conditions. They can dig through the snow to get at their feed. Oh my God, there's a wolf. Wolf behind me. Oh wow, that is incredible. I think the yaks might have spotted the wolf.
The yaks start running.
I suppose it's no surprise that I'm seeing wolves up in the mountains away from people, because across the world they are persecuted. Beautiful animal.
Wolves are the primary predator for camels here, but a single wolf wouldn't go for a big, healthy animal like Chewy or Squeaks. they would go for a smaller wild camel.
Oh, what a spot. That was great.
Camera in hand, Gordon is grinning broadly.
Right, my boy's just up ahead. I could go a little bit higher, but I don't want to today. Well done, boys.
Gordon's unpacking his kit.
I think my first encounter with Chewie and with Squeaks, I thought there's no way that we're going to become buddies, but we definitely have. They're just such charming individuals. So yeah, I've grown to love the most unlikely, unusual of animals. Here, my boys.
Gordon's tent under the darkening skies. Inside the tent, Gordon's wearing a technical all-weather jacket.
Oh my God. Really?
He opens the tent flap and finds that everywhere's covered in snow.
Oh Jesus. Oh Jesus. Oh my God. Holy moly. What did I do now? Who are you?
You got a snowy hump.
This fur will eventually shed in the summer, but right now it's still a thick, thick coat of long, soft hair, as long as 15 inches in places, protecting them from the biting cold and wind.
Here we go. It's all gone.
Dressed in his traditional deal, Gordon is tying a bright yellow sash around his waist.
They can't go over the highest point. It's incredibly steep, incredibly high. There's a pass. There's a lower, sort of, fairly vast saddle. That might be the best way up and over. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. We're gaining altitude with every single step. So this is the toughest part of the journey, in the toughest possible conditions. As anxious as I am about this route, man, it is beautiful. Stunning.
Gordon's standing on the snowy hillside, looking at the vast mountain range ahead of him.
Come on, dudes.
They're plodding along towards swirling mist over the snowy ground.
I don't know whether it's just because I've come higher, but the weather's taken a change. In front of me is completely shrouded in mist, and behind me is the same. And the camels are very reluctant to move forward. I've committed to this, there's no going back. Come on, boys, we've got to do it. Hook, hook! Hook, hook, hook! Hook! Managed to find a little bit of a path. I've got the camels moving a bit.
Over the grey rock, they trudge onwards.
We are very nearly there.
The mountain pass is in sight.
This is, I mean, I've literally got another 20 metres to go, and the hard part of this journey is over. Oh, 10 more paces, and I'm at the pass. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9, 10. Oh, wow. Oh, my.
Whew. At the pass, a great vista opens up of a deep valley and further mountains beyond, and the grey clouds begin to part.
Okay, boys, we've done it. We have done this part.
Gordon tosses a stone into some deep snow at the side of the narrow path.
When it comes to amazing animals, and the world is full of them, they're as amazing as it gets. And my appreciation and admiration for these two camels is beyond words, really. Love you guys. Incredible. Can't believe that there was a day when I was scared of you. Now, hope you can just gaze into those dreamy eyes with appreciation and love and respect. Downhill. Ahead. The Gobi Bear awaits.
The grey clouds have thickened again, and Gordon and the camels walk onwards, now heading downhill.
Now we've made it over the mountain, I'm embarking on the final leg of my journey, my search for the Gobi Bear. There are strict controls over the place where the Gobi Bears live, meaning I can't take Chewy and Squeaks with me. So nomads will take care of them for a few days until I return. The Gobi Bear territory is south of the Boombat Mountains and covers a massive area.
Gordon has set up a film camera on a tripod.
This is the Great Gobi Strictly Protected Area. It covers over 46,000 square kilometres. And within that area, there's believed to be no more than 50 Gobi bears. So this is... yeah, needle in a haystack doesn't quite cover it. You know, where do you start looking for a Gobi bear? The most likely places for any mammal that lives in the desert is sort of a source of water.
Gordon's in a grassy area at the foot of a hill.
The reason that I'm looking in here, if you look around this landscape, this is the only little stand of vegetation, and that's because there's water here.
A small bird in the thin grass. Gordon's looking carefully at the ground.
Aha. This is some bear droppings, bear poo. Yeah, you can tell it's from a bear. If you break it open, it's going to be all just vegetation. Gobi bears, they are omnivores, like other brown bears living in different parts of the world, but these bears, their diet is almost entirely vegetation. But this is great. This is a clear sign that this is an area that's frequented by the bears. I think setting up the camera traps here is a really good idea.
There's less than 50 of these bears left, so scientists put out extra food at this time of year. They've kindly lent me some of their camera traps.
The bears are just out of hibernation, so they're at their hungriest. There's not much natural food around, so this food that's been provisioned for them, I'm hoping that this is going to be the focus for them, and so therefore it's a focus for me.
The chances are low. One scientist here has only seen a bear with his own eyes 5 times in 20 years, and I'm only here for a few days. But I'll give it my best shot.
Gordon hunkers down in a rocky crevice.
It's about to get dark soon. So I'm all set up. Camera is good to go. Bed is incredibly comfortable. I've spent time with lots of other bear species in different parts of the world. But the Gobi bear is very different. It is, I would say, the most hardcore. Way more hardcore than a polar bear. There's a lot of food up in the Arctic. For a Gobi bear, it's next to bugger all here. And it's actually my birthday. 52. I know, incredible, right? Yes, my birthday. And what a nice way to spend it.
There's a thin crescent moon in the sky above the hillside. Gordon is crouching beside his camera and tripod.
It's just after 6 o'clock in the morning. Sun's not up, but there's enough light that I can see down over this whole area. I don't see no bears. But there is always a chance that the camera trap might have caught something.
He makes his way down the hillside to check the footage from the camera trap.
Right. In this little box, I have the cards from the camera traps from the water points, feeding areas in this area.
Here we go. I almost don't want to look.
Nothing. Oh, go back. Hang on, what was that? Oh, it's a fox. Okay, some partridge. Hey, a hare. Oh, a camel. How cool is that? That is great. Very different from Chewy and Squeak.
These wild camels are only found in Mongolia and parts of China. They're critically endangered, with less than 1,000 left.
Okay, next one, come on. Oh, you beauty, look at that. Gosh, look at him. I'm saying him because it is, this has got to be a male. He is huge. I'm just blown away by seeing this. Just sings to my heart to see a gobi bear. Especially one as stunning as this, just rolling along, a raven and a bear, both after the same source of food.
The big brown bear is helping himself at the feeding station.
For me, wildlife filmmaking is all about showing people how special the natural world is and how fragile and how vulnerable it is, so that anyone, everyone, can do whatever we can to prevent unique animals like this from disappearing. I fell in love with camels on this trip to Mongolia, and I think it's easy on first sight to fall in love with a gobi bear.
As much as I've travelled through these amazing, varied landscapes, I think the thing that will stay with me is the journey that I've been on with these camels. Without these camels, the world would be a very different place. The success of the great Mongol Empire, the greatest empire in the world, was also on the backs of these camels. I've really learned about these animals. I know what makes them so special. I know what is wonderful about them. I know what they're capable of. This nomadic way of life would not be possible were it not for these extraordinary, quite weird-looking beasts.
Gordon riding a camel across the desert plain. In memory of Perevdova Bayamanya, 2016 to 2024.